Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, how are we doing this week?
Happy. Relieved a little bit. A little frustrated. Think there's still some areas for improvement. But a win is a great way to start the week. And you were there, Jim. How was the environment?
I tell you what. Let's start with that. First of all, it was fantastic. I'll start first with tailgating. I got there at noon for a 7:30 game. And for me, it's not like going around the corner. I'm 90 minutes away from State College. So I had an early start here. It was fantastic. Big, big, big shout out to my buddy Paul from Greater Good Brewery. He provided us with the Pulp Daddy beer for the tailgate. Monster hit, Steve. Monster hit. Hazy IPA. It is fantastic beer. Fantastic. Got us in the mood. Then getting into the stadium, the first thing I tweeted out, I took a picture from the press box across the way. Everybody in white. They listened to James Franklin. It was whiteout energy. The crowd came with their A game. We're going to do some evaluations of the team, players, coaches, fans. I'll give them an A, Steve.
Well, I'm sure we'll get into it later, but I mean, I think you saw at Illinois down there when they were in the goal line that student section really making an impact there between disrupting the snap and some penalties. You know, they can say what they want, but there really is a home field advantage for Penn State. And there's some tangible proof to that, that I think you see on the field.
There really is. And I know James Franklin gets a hard time from a lot of different quarters, including this show and the two of us. It happens. But I'm going to give him credit for two things, Steve, talking about the crowd. A week ago, his call for whiteout energy, he knew exactly what he was doing. He knew the fans would know exactly what he was doing. They would respond correctly, and they did. The second thing I'm going to give James Franklin credit for is post-game, not only did he give the fans credit, he had like stats to back it up. Like there were I think it was seven plays he said that the crowd had an effect. Kudos, James Franklin. Just like if a player comes up big, you give him credit. Fans come up big, give him credit. Way to go, James Franklin.
That's knowing your audience. I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah, exactly. Good on him for that. So in the end, it was a 21-7 win. Great environment. State College, night game. It's just a super environment. And we also shout out to a couple of our listeners who they were from the Midwest, a couple of Penn State fans. They came out to this was their first game at State College, at Penn State. They had been to some games out in the Midwest as Penn State fans, like at Illinois, Wisconsin, and so on. But they came in. They stayed with GoPSURV. I'm plugging all of our sponsors. They stayed there at the RV lot in Bellefonte, had a fantastic time. And that was, could you imagine that being your first game, you know, this kind of experience for it? So that was all fantastic. The game itself, 21-7. First of all, Steve, just give me the overview of the game for you.
I mean, there are sort of things to be proud of. I think positive signs, and there are still a lot of areas I think that can be improved. And at this point, I think we'll probably touch it later. You know, some patterns of concern that really haven't been addressed this late into the season. I mean, now we're already four games into the season, so you haven't. The fact that these are still issues, I think, is concerning. But look, I'll start with the physicality. That was something that I expressed concern with, just given Penn State in the past with the trenches. I thought both the offensive and defensive fronts, particularly the line, really exceeded my expectations. They probably exceeded Brett Bielema's expectations. Start with the offense. You know, they gave a lot of holes to those running backs, and I think both Singleton and Catron Allen ran really hard. And you know, credit to the line. I think Aller definitely wasn't his best game. He looked off, but I don't know that was because he was really getting as much pressure as I thought. My sense, you were there, have to watch the maybe the all 22 personnel vision of the game, but my gut tells me that Illinois was playing back with a couple safeties, really did not give up the big play. Under Penn State, I think only had one play over 20 yards, and that was probably by design. But, you know, I think Bielema was betting that his defensive front would get the best of Penn State's offensive line, and they didn't. And so it was nice to see the offensive line really dictating their will. Again, the offense was really the one. I thought they played a pretty good game. I think there was times where they stopped themselves. We'll talk about the kicking, I'm sure, at some point, another area of concern. And then defensively, I was really concerned after the first drive with the ease that Illinois went down the field. Other than one or two big runs, though, I thought the defense really did a good job of shutting down that Illinois run game. That was a concern I had, again, as someone who sat in that 9 overtime game. But, you know, one thing I think that could be improved upon, again, maybe a little alarming heading into the season, as we're getting to the meat of it now, is it seemed like Illinois was doing a lot of what Bowling Green did with these quick passes, and they were pretty effective with that. But, you know, at the end of the day, when defense, you needed them, they definitely came up big with a lot of sacks in the particularly the fourth quarter. I guess I go back to, you know, had Penn State built that lead a little earlier in the game, maybe they would have even had more sacks. But, you know, overall, happy. I just feel metaphorically and obviously just a lot of points left on the field. And I'm sure we'll get into that in a bit.
Yeah, we definitely will. And I don't know if you mentioned the penalties, that they are just so frustrating, Steve.
Well, and I would say even what makes them more frustrating is the fact that they're the same penalties. It's one thing just to not have a disciplined team, but it's the same people doing the same thing, which is the offsides. And, you know, I thought Abdul Carter actually played a decent game. I think he's candidly more effective when he's not playing at the defensive end. I liked him when he was playing the spy position. I thought he had a nice pass breakup one time when he was in the spy role. But, you know, one of the things when you're a big name player like Carter, and I'm sure the Penn State coaches are telling the officials, look, you need to watch this guy because they're probably going to hold him, which in many cases they are. But because the officials are already watching you, they're going to watch you jump off sides. And at this point in the season, I know Franklin's talked about it. Do something about it. I know there's not really the threat of benching the guy. But, you know, and it's not just Carter. It's other people, too. The other penalty that was frustrating, I thought, was on the interception when the guy pushed him in the back. I mean, I don't think the guy was going to catch him. I just thought that was a dumb penalty. Really didn't need to do that. One penalty that I thought was just egregiously called was the one on Tony Rojas. I heard the explanation that they gave on the field. Somehow, like when you're playing defense, you can't blindside hit the guy. I've never experienced that. I know some of the rules have changed. I thought that was so stupid, and it was so consequential at the time. Really a bad call from the officials. But that's sort of how I saw it.
Well, let's hit on a couple of those. First of all, the penalties, you make the great point. It's the same people doing the same things. Now, the offsides, this theory that, oh, because we've seen it from Abdul Carter before, they're looking for the offsides. I am way up in, you know, up in the press box. It was 100,000 people there. They all saw him go offsides. I mean, it's the easiest call in the world. When you're rushing from the defensive end position, you take that false step, you know, early. And in the play where Abdul Carter did it, he completely stopped then. It's like, oops, guilty. That was me, you know. And he makes it all the more obvious for the quarterback then, who knows he has a free play. So the offsides call, that's a matter of discipline. Then the other penalties, where it's the unnecessary roughness, blocks in the back, or late hits, some of those too, they're disciplined. And the play that you mentioned it with Tony Rojas, I saw the game live, but then so wasn't really didn't get the explanation. But when it was explained, and that's an official who's doing the explaining, it's like, oh, well, based on what he said, it is a penalty, that's the rule. And the other part to it, though, I'll ask you this, though. The quarterback, in watching the play, the quarterback was behind the line of scrimmage, and the guy that he hit, I think, was a tight end. So he's an eligible receiver. At the very least, would that have been like holding, you know, because he's an eligible receiver?
If they want to say that was the call, then that would have been fine. What I don't have any sympathy for is the idea that somehow this isn't basketball, okay? The guy's out there on the field and he's in your way as a defender. You have a right to get through him to try to make a play. And I don't care what the official said. That's a BS call as far as I'm concerned. My guess is that's probably one of the things James Franklin and I actually see eye to eye on.
Well, what's funny is the term you use, a BS call, that's exactly, only the full word was used by James Franklin if you saw his or heard his radio interview at halftime.
Well, I'm trying to be mindful of your rating here on your show.
I do appreciate that. But the thing, too, just staying on the penalties here for a minute, is I want to blame the coaching staff for not cleaning this stuff up, but Penn State has been very good about penalties for years. Okay, so it's not like this is an annual issue with the James Franklin team and his staff. They've annually been very good about having very few penalties. So this year, it just seems like it's the outlier, Steve.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. A lot of the penalties have really been more on the defensive side of the ball. We have Allen coming in coaching. I'm not sure that that's necessarily all attributable to him, but that's sort of the main change that I've seen compared to more recent years. I mean, look, we talked last week about how Kansas is struggling without Kodo Nicky. I mean, one could make the argument Indiana's thriving without Allen. It's just another way to think about it, I guess.
Well, there's also a long way to go in the season. Indiana is.
And they look pretty good against credit. You saw some of that game on Saturday.
I was going to say, give them credit for where they are right now. We're going to get back to the Penn State-Illinois game. But just speaking of egregious calls, did you see the Minnesota offsides on the onside kick?
Yeah, that's a typical Michigan favorite call. If you're Michigan, Ohio State, a lot of the calls tend to go your way. Surprise, surprise, Big Ten.
I want to make my comment about it. I will do that right after the break. Stay with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Steve. We're talking Penn State football. It's quarter number two. Before we get back to Penn State, I just want to mention this. We talk about sour Steve. This is salty Jim, okay? These are things that upset me, and it's upset me for years. You alluded to it. The bad call, for those who didn't see it, Michigan had a big lead on Minnesota. Minnesota comes almost all the way back. It's 27-24, maybe a little over a minute to go. They onside kick. They recover the onside kick. Now, this is exciting. Minnesota gets called for offsides. Now, if you watch closely when teams kick off, there's always a player who's pretty close to being offsides, and oftentimes they are, but It's very seldom called because you're not getting much of an advantage. If your foot hits the line, as it just, it's not called very often. But if you watch the replay of it, they're not offsides. Okay. My take is if it's close, you're not sure either way, you don't call it. This wasn't close though. They weren't offside and the officials managed to call it. It reminded me years ago, Penn State, Wisconsin had the same thing happen. There's a screenshot of it. Nobody on Penn State is offsides. So again, Michigan at home getting the advantage of the call, Steve. It drives me crazy.
It is what it is, unfortunately. I go back to 2005 when they put that extra play on the clock.
I'm sorry. I can't just say it is what it is. It still drives me crazy. So anyway, that's salty, Jim. Let's move on. Let's talk about this Penn State team. Offensively, now, they didn't get that third touchdown till late in the game after the turnover. So on the surface, it's like, boy, they really didn't put up many points. But I think there's a lot to like with what the offense did. But as in several of the other games, they're not getting a lot of possessions. They had nine possessions, but they had two at the end of the first half, end of the game. So they don't really count. So they really only had seven possessions. And when three out of the seven end up with two with missed field goals and one they went for on fourth down, that's, you know, self-inflicted wounds. But let's talk about some of the things they did well. And in between segments, you brought up Tyler Warren. And he's turning into he's always been a really good player. This year, it seems really special.
He's a special player, and he can literally do it all. I mean, I'm on the Warren for Heisman train. Happy to be the conductor on that. I mean, seriously, you talk about an impactful player on offense. I mean, guys throwing touchdown passes, running for them, catching them, handing them off. He does a tremendous job. You can tell he has a quarterback background. That was something that Blackledge, who also I think really does a good job calling the games here for the commentary, explaining how he really puts those defenders in conflict, holding that ball, making that defender commit to either him or the running back, and then making the best read. I think he's more effective, candidly, back there than Bo Prabula. Now, I will admit, I was somebody very early on in the season that thought having Prabula back there would be an asset to sort of keep the defense honest, knowing that Aller's not really much of a true running threat there. But really, at this point, I think they're better off with Warren in there. One of the, I think, things that I'm noticing, and if I'm noticing it, I'm sure people that get paid millions of dollars to be defensive coordinators are noticing it for the other teams, is he doesn't get in that often, Prabula. And so when he does, he wants to try to do something, so he's keeping the ball, and everybody's sort of keying in on that. And at least with Warren, I think he's at this point just being much more effective out there. The other thing I sort of think about too is, you know, we mentioned, I think, the first segment about how the safeties may have been playing back a little bit to prevent the big play. And we've talked before about how Penn State really has a balanced offense. And I think that's a credit to them, where if you're going to take something away, Penn State's going to find another way to beat you. That goes back to, I think, Bielema's thought that, you know, Penn State wouldn't be able to run the ball down the throat, and that's actually exactly what they did. I think that probably had to do a little bit with the safety. And look, let's just be honest. It wasn't Aller's best game. There were some throws, and he was just off. And I don't know that they were all necessarily attributable to the offensive line, which, again, I thought did a pretty good job overall. It wasn't like they were living in the backfield and really making things uncomfortable. Sometimes you just have off days. So maybe that also attributed to leaning more on the run. I also will give credit to Phil Troutline, because there were a couple of changes of linemen there during the game, and you really didn't see a dramatic drop-off, at least from my standpoint watching it. So really a good job for them. Look, you didn't really get much out of the receivers. Again, that was probably by the design there. And, you know, I'll give Kotelnicki credit for, you know, taking what's out there. The other thing I thought that sort of did that thing about, you know, let's go ahead and sort of have some sustained drives, is that defense was out there for a long time. They were struggling particularly earlier in the game, to get off the field. Illinois was moving the ball, to your point, about just limiting the number of possessions that Penn State had. From a game perspective, it probably couldn't have gone any better for Brett Bielema. That's exactly the kind of game he wanted Illinois to play and have. And credit for Penn State for almost out-Illinoising Illinois, running the ball better, you know, being able to sustain these drives and coming up, you know, big at the end of the game when it really mattered.
There's so much there I want to respond to. Let's start with Tyler Warren. There's no doubt, boy, he's a weapon when they put him in there at quarterback. And we've talked, I've talked to several of the folks on our show about how much you show in like those games against Kent State. And there was this, well, they showed Tyler Warren in at quarterback. They showed him running the ball. They showed him throwing the ball. So was that wise or not? I think just showing that they're willing to let Tyler Warren throw the ball, even if they're never going to let him do it again. It's on tape, him throwing the ball from the Wildcat. I thought that was important. Also, him running the ball. My goodness, you got a guy that size taking off with it. He's a weapon. You also brought up the point, and as you mentioned, Todd Blackledge did in the broadcast of the game, he's making good decisions whether to hand it off or not. If he's showing he's that good a runner, especially going right up the middle where the quarterback's going, especially at his size, and you got to be leery of that, then the option is giving the ball either to Catron Allen or Nick Singleton. That's a real catch-22 for the defense. It's just not a comfortable thing, I would think.
No, and one thing we haven't mentioned but deserves to be recognized is he's a very good blocker. When you look at some of these places where he's almost more of a fullback, and I think when you talk about, you know, I hope for him, he's a great player. It sounds like he's a great teammate, everything you'd want. I hope he makes a lot of money at the next level through this versatility. But, you know, being able to block shouldn't be discounted there. I know it doesn't always get the attention it should. But that's definitely not lost on Singleton and Allen when you watch sort of Warren playing from that fullback position.
And also, you mentioned earlier, and I'm glad you did, the offensive line and how well they played, even after having a guy or two nicked up, you know, and they made changes, and you really didn't feel that there was a step back with it. But the tight end is put in position oftentimes to be that lead blocker. So oftentimes it's the offensive line is it's neutral. You hope they hold up, but it is the tight end as the lead blocker who will spring the running back. You know, it's like the over under the difference maker, and he's done a good job at that also. But I also wanted to hit on speaking of lead blockers and what Andy Kotelnicki does. Is he puts Vega Ioane in motion and has him as a lead blocker, and he's also stationed him in the backfield, as you said, acting as a fullback. I got a feeling that Ioane really, really likes that because he gets a head of steam before hitting somebody, but it's really effective.
I was only imagining what the defensive back's eyes must have looked like when he saw him coming at him on that particular play. Look, I think Kotelnicki's a creative guy. And I guess my concern after this season is that other teams may notice that and he may get a head coaching opportunity. And if he's sort of thinking about all the talent that's probably likely to leave at the end of this year between Tyler Warren, Drew Aller, Nick Singleton, Catron Allen, I'm sure I'm leaving others off. You know, he may think maybe in his best interest to sort of leave on a high note, as opposed to next year where the cupboard be a little more bare. So, you know, I guess we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But overall, I think he's been a nice addition. The other thing I'll mention too, just sort of getting into the second half of the game here and sort of Penn State out Illinois, Illinois, was this sort of two-headed tandem back there between Allen and Singleton. And those guys are fresh. And that makes a big difference, you know, when your offensive line is sort of establishing itself in the first half to really dominate and dictate the terms of the second half. That team's getting stronger. And you saw really physical runs. One of the plays that jumped out at me that may not have jumped out to everybody was a first down screen pass that Singleton, you know, got. He was definitely short of it, but he lowered his shoulder and was able to get an additional 2 or 3 yards to get the first down after he went and put a guy who I think was like 6'4", 275 on his back on a chip block. I mean, that, again, if I'm an NFL scout, that really impresses me as a guy who wants to play.
Well, it's funny watching the game live. I know the exact play you were talking about. I was impressed when Singleton catches the pass and runs over a defender. Just wonderful play. And it's the kind of thing that it's not just me. It's not just you, Steve. The crowd knows it. I mean, there is nothing like having your running back run somebody over. Okay. But credit to you with pointing out, watching then the replay and watching it, I'll call live, you know, on the replay as opposed to the TV putting on the replay. I noticed that block too. He took on a much bigger guy and leveled him, catches the pass, then levels another guy. That is, yes, something NFL scouts will notice, but also as a fan, you notice too.
Yeah, and your teammates notice it. I think most of all, this guy is coming to play. He's out there making plays. And look, this is something that I think is encouraging. I've always expressed some concern over the lack of physicality, and I think we're starting to see more of it. And I think that's not only advantages from a fan perspective, but just from a winning perspective. Being able to dictate the terms, that's what good teams do. And I think that's sort of the next step here I'd like to see in, from a program perspective.
And Steve, what I'm a big, you know, that third down guy, the number of possessions, a penalty causes you to give up the ball, a drop pass causes you to give up the ball. As I pointed out, they had 7 legitimate possessions. That's it. So if you blow a possession, that's a huge turning point. We'll talk about that more, Steve, when we get back right after this break.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 3. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We're talking the Penn State win over Illinois, 21-7 on Saturday night. We've talked about it. It was a great atmosphere, a lot of fun. A lot of whiteout energy going. And a couple things, and I want to tie them together, Steve, is I was mentioning the number of possessions, and I've become kind of over-analytical, I think, about this anymore. Because when I go and prepare for this show, I go to the stat sheet, and I'll look, and I now recognize, oh, wait a minute, let me look at the number of possessions they had. And I mentioned Penn State had a total of 7 possessions in this game, not counting, like I said, end of first half and when they got the ball at the very end of the game. So I'm not counting those two as relevant. Out of these 7 possessions, 2 were touchdowns, 2 were missed field goals. 1 was that 4th down they didn't convert when they could have kicked the field goal. You know, they were in position. Again, we'll talk about the kicker in a minute. So they, I missed one. They only punted the ball once, okay, which to me says, okay, the offense is operating pretty well. It's they gave up, you know, those 3 possessions with missed field goals. But the few possessions is for a couple reasons. One, if you're Penn State, and now I'm going to tie in the other aspect, which you mentioned, out Brett Bielema-ing Illinois. Illinois could not get a running game going. Their running game was awful, and it was right from the start. They were much better off passing the ball, which is why I couldn't understand in a crucial possession in the second half. Illinois had 3rd and 4, and chose to run the ball.
Yeah, that was a perplexing play. I mean, I will give the defense credit for that. I mean, we talked a lot about concern of Illinois being able to run the ball. I think that was a conscious effort by Tom Allen. Said, look, let's take this away. Let's make Altmyer and that Illinois passing game beat us. I thought Altmyer, up to the interception, for the most part, played a pretty good game for Illinois. What concerns me moving forward is it looked very similar to Bowling Green, which is a lot of these quick passes where you sort of get, if you're concerned about that strong defensive front coming at you, which Altmyer definitely experienced more towards the end of the game. But you know, the Bowling Green tape is out, and Illinois may have added a few different plays to show other teams as well. But you know, another game I watched earlier in the day was USC and Wisconsin, and that's sort of what I have some concern about moving forward is, you know, what is USC's passing game going to do? That's by far going to be the best passing team Penn State has played. And like, this isn't rocket science, okay? If they're going to get the ball out quick, then maybe those corners and those guys should be up on them a little sooner. So, you know, I did not really have an answer for that. You know, I know Allen's making these sort of halftime adjustments. I just don't know that you can afford to spot some of these better teams, specifically USC and Ohio State, an entire half before sort of correcting these things. But, you know, I'll give credit for the defense for really taking away the run there. But to your point, too, that's a conscious decision by Bielema. He wants to limit the number of times that Penn State's going to have the ball. And you know, I think, and for the most part, the game, the direction of it, the flow really went, I think, towards Bielema's advantage. Just credit to Penn State for sort of beating them at their own game.
Well, in the beginning, it was fascinating to me. I think so many people, we think Illinois, we think of what they did to Penn State in previous games and what Brett Bielema wants to do. And I'm sure he does still want to play 3 yards in a cloud of dust. You know, he wants to just run it down your throat. But what he found out, he couldn't do that. But he does have a quarterback who he probably has more trust in than he did previously. And as you pointed out, you know, the Bowling Green model was there for the short passing game.
It was. And look, I know the defense is dealing with some injuries there. But that's, again, another area I'd like to see sort of addressed. You know, the Bowling Green tape was out there, sort of hoping that it would have made some corrections. I didn't see that, at least really in the first half, and just hope that they'll be corrected really for USC. I don't think that UCLA is going to really challenge them there, but really that secondary and sort of have some sort of counter to these quick passes is something I'd like to see moving forward.
Well, and just again, looking at the stat sheet, the third quarter stat sheet for Illinois, 2 carries for a total of 2 yards, and throwing the ball, 3 passes, 2 completions for a total of 9 yards. So, you know, yeah, you'd like to see that earlier, but it was a pretty dominating second half. You know, I had made mention during the game as they approach halftime, the offense or the defense has allowed 1 score, 7 points, and I'm going to be critical of the defense. I don't think they played well. You know, Illinois had multiple long possessions. And again, as you said, that turns it into a Brett Bielema game, which that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, I mean, the defense struggled to get off the field on third down. There's one play in particular that really stands out to me. I forget whether there's a third or fourth quarter. I think it was in the second half when it was had a back, I think, against the student section. It was like 3rd and 20, and it's a screen pass, and they end up giving it. And, you know, they really had a chance to get the ball back with some good field position and really couldn't get out of their own way. One thing I will give the defense and, again, the student section and the fans a lot of credit, though, is the end of the first half, the second quarter. The fact that, you know, Illinois had the ball down there by the goal line, wasn't able to come away with any points. You know, that was a big momentum change as opposed to going down at the half and then sort of starting third quarter and going to get a touchdown. I mean, you can almost argue that was a 14-point swing in Penn State's favor. And when points are at a premium, that shouldn't be overlooked.
Well, I think the play you were referring to, I believe, happened in the first half.
Okay, first half.
Because in the second half, again, those the numbers are very telling. You know, for the third down conversions, this third quarter, the stats were ridiculous. Penn State had 112 yards total offense. Illinois had a total of 11 yards and five plays in the third quarter.
You're right. It may have been the second
quarter. Yeah. And Illinois was 1 for 5 in the fourth quarter, so on third down conversion. So it was a complete – I already created my narrative for the game that the defense was disappointing in the first half when, you know, I've not been giving them enough credit for completely shutting down Illinois in the second half. Now, I know it's like, are we seeing that trend where they're getting burned in the first half? And if you play a more talented team, then what's going to happen? But I think we also have to, you know, give credit where it's due. Now, we've waited too long to bring this up because it's too big of an issue. You mentioned the kicking game, and it's fascinating to see how the different minds work. The kicker missed the field goal in the West Virginia game, and I know that riled you up. That got you going. And then the next when he hit his next couple, I mean, you and I were texting, and you did a – he's going to miss the field goal anyway. Well, he looked really good in those two kicks, hit the ball solid right down the middle. I'm thinking, okay, maybe he just got over whatever it was. All right, I'm conceding. This was unacceptable. And it's not that he doesn't mishit the ball. I mean, he hits it hard. It's like being a golfer. And you hit the ball well, but you're left or right. And I'm with, you know, with our playing partner, it's like, well, you struck it well. Sorry, it doesn't matter if you struck it well, but it's in the woods. Well, the same thing here. It's now reached a point where, now, I don't think you could trust them anymore. They've got to make a change at kicker, don't they, Steve?
I think so. I mean, again, I'm not a kicking expert, but so much of that, when you use the golf analogy, is mental. And once you've lost your confidence at that point, it's not a stroke issue. It's not a leg issue. I mean, this guy's been kicking, I assume, most of his life. But it's really between the years. And to miss two kicks like that, one to the left, one to the right, you know, you can't be doing that. I mean, first of all, if he makes both kicks, he's at 27 points, which is what I predicted the score would be last week. So I'm a little just annoyed by that. Look, so he makes both of them, and let's give the Illinois guy, because he missed one too. But that would have put the game right at 17, which would have covered right at the spread number. So maybe those people in Vegas know something. Look, I think they, at this point, made a mistake in giving him a scholarship to kick. Maybe a bigger mistake next year to keep him on one, maybe encourage him to go take an NIL off or go somewhere else. You have tens of thousands of young men walking around up there. My guess is somebody can kick the ball better than him on campus. I'd try to find him.
Well, the fact is they actually do have two other kickers that they say.
We brought the guy from Tulsa who kicked for Tulsa last year.
Right, and his numbers at Tulsa were pretty good. And you can't use the, oh, well, that was at Tulsa. When you're kicking, you're kicking.
That doesn't make a difference whether you're D1 or D3, to be honest. You're kicking a football through the uprights. It's the same thing.
Exactly. Now, the scholarship thing, I think there's a great value in having a good kicker. And they no doubt, Sanders Sahadek was very highly regarded coming out of school. So, you know, I think the question is, more, you know, do you spend a scholarship on a kicker or not? Or do you bring in a transfer kicker?
I'm using a scholarship on a kicker. I guess at this point, though, it's clear that using one on him was a mistake. The bigger mistake would be keeping him on scholarship and not giving it to somebody else next year.
Well, there's also the matter of do you process players? Do you take a scholarship player and say, hey, you're not going to be on scholarship anymore? I think all you can do is let him know that. And I think a change is going to be made. You know, James Franklin, when asked after the game in his press conference about the kicker, he was like, hey, essentially, I'm not going to address that now. We do have a competition every week. Blah, blah. It's a win. He's on the team. Yeah. We celebrate as a team. To me, though, that answer was,
Franklin,
yes, we're going to be making a change.
I agree. But, you know, we're, what, four games into it? I mean, luckily it's UCLA coming up. You need to have that address when you play USC. because you hope that if it's going to be a close game, it's not going to come down to a missed kick. One of the reasons they went for it on fourth down was because I think they lacked confidence in Zahedak. Again, if you had a more confidence in your kicker, you probably would have kicked it there. That starts to mess with everything. I go back to 2012. Now, I know that story sort of had a happy ending with Sam Ficken, but that really played into Bill O'Brien's strategy, whether or not to go for it on fourth down. And, you know, fortunately for Penn State, it hasn't cost them a game yet. But when you look at USC, Ohio State in particular, Wisconsin, you know, I never know what you're going to get out of them. You would just hate to see, you know, you lose a game, potentially a chance at the playoffs for something like that.
All right. That's it for our conversation on kickers. Fourth quarter, I want to bring up a few other players who had good games. We'll do that right after this break.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number four. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We're talking about the Penn State-Illinois game for last Saturday. The score 21-7. Nice win for Penn State. You brought up if he had made those kicks, could have covered the spread. As you said, Illinois also missed the kick, but Penn State had a fourth down play where they could have even kicked another field goal, and Penn State would have, for those degenerates who are betting when it's an 18-point spread, guilty, Penn State could have covered. All right, and there were points during the game where it's frustrating when it's a one-score game, Steve, and I look up at the scoreboard at total yardage, and Penn State's like outgaining Illinois 2-1, and it's still a one-possession game. Let's take a look at some of the other highlights of the game. And you got to hit, we've talked about it a little bit, the running game, but you've got this combination of Nick Singleton and Catron Allen at running back. And Steve, I'm looking at, it's not just, obviously they're both good running backs, but the ability to catch the ball. We didn't see a lot of it in this game, but I look at those guys as weapons. And when you throw Tyler Warren into the mix, those are your three best offensive weapons. I want to see them make use of those guys. And what you had is between Nick Singleton and Catron Allen, if my count is correct, I have them with 9 carries of over 10 yards.
Yeah, I was just thinking in my head, if you use Warren, Singleton, and Allen, I'm curious how many plays where the ball actually went somewhere else. I don't know that you know that statistic off the top of your head, but I'm just sort of struggling right now, just looking back at the game, to think that anybody else really made a significant impact. Again, I think that was Illinois sort of by design. They didn't want to get beat, you know, over the top with Evans or Wallace. That said, you know, we still have these questions about, you know, the wide receivers really stepping up and to make these impact plays. And it may have been the way Illinois was playing the game, but we really didn't see that yesterday. But, you know, Dance with Ubrunya, these are three special players. And Kotelnicki has, I think, enough smarts to recognize if something's working, stick with it.
And I quickly did the math here. Got two more there. 40 out of 65 offensive plays, 45 were Warren, yeah, Singleton, and Allen. And you can't blame the offense for doing that. And having this, you know, a pass catcher like Warren also is effective running the ball. And you have running backs who are effective catching the ball. Those are your weapons, Steve. Go ahead and use them.
And to have a tandem. I mean, I know there have been times when you've had two gifted running backs at Penn State. I don't know that they've been utilized the way that Allen Singleton, that you can get sort of as many touches for both of them. I remember, like, you know, Saquon Barkley was here, Miles Sanders was sort of the backup, would come in now and then for relief duty. But to really, again, at the end of the game, that both these guys are fresh and sort of getting stronger as a result for that, I think is a tremendous asset to this team. And something I think that's going to be missed. You know, I'd like to see it replicated. I hope Penn State can do it moving forward. But again, having two guys at the same time that can really sort of split carries and be effective is something I'm just struggling to think that we've seen in recent years.
Well, and also – You could describe this a couple ways. The load balance, if you look at the end of the game and the number of carries, it's almost like someone is on the sideline saying, well, right now Singleton's got four more carries, so you put in Catron Allen. And at the end, just to tell you, show you how balanced it was, Catron Allen had 18 carries, 103 yards. Singleton, 16 carries, 94 yards. So Catron Allen had two more carries. Oh, by the way, Singleton had two receptions. So they each had an identical 18 possessions. So 103 yards for Catron Allen. If you add the Nick Singleton's 25 yards, for he had a total of 119 yards carrying the ball and receiving. Yeah, these guys are weapons. They're a huge part of it. And, you know, again, talking to how important the running game was in this game, look at the stats. They carried the ball 44 times and only threw it 21 times, Steve.
Yeah, again, I go back to, you know, I'd be curious if I ever watched the game, how much is that just sort of Illinois really trying to prevent the pass, sort of concede or offering the run? How much of it, too? We talk Aller, you know, being a little off, the passing game, you know, wasn't clicking today. That happens. Probably some combination of the two. But again, to have the versatility to be able to rely on another area of your offense when you know that one's not necessarily where you need it to be in a given game is a huge advantage, because a lot of times offenses really don't have that balance.
Exactly. And with this running, I think it was the combination of things. By the way, Drew Aller started the game very hot. His passing was really on point. He was throwing darts. Then I don't know if he got a little uncomfortable, but he was missing some throws.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it happens. And there were just, unfortunately, there were some critical throws on third down or plays that could have resulted in a first down. And the ball placement was just a little off. Is that, I'm the one ascribing blame to Aller. Maybe it's not fair. Maybe the receiver wasn't exactly where, you know, they were supposed to be. All I know is the ball wasn't really in a place where the receiver could make a play on it. And a result that, you know, those drives suffered. And to your point, you know, you only get a few opportunities, so you really need to utilize them. Which just, I will reiterate the fact that you can't be missing these field goals and leaving points, you know, off the board, because you really have to make the most of your limited opportunities.
Yes, and they hit the point in the third quarter. I'm just looking at the drive chart. One of their possessions, Penn State ran the ball eight consecutive times, and that. And I'm okay with that.
If it's working, and like I said, I think that's one area where the offensive line has really, you know, improved. Like, I went to the same high school as Olu Fashanu. Obviously, we didn't overlap. Olu's a great pass protector. I think you could make a case that his running game blocking was not nearly as good as his pass blocking. And I think that sort of teams knew that. And so if Penn State was going to run last year, it was obviously we're going to go to the right as opposed to the left. And that makes it pretty easy to defend the scheme there. I think there's a little more balance this year. And again, I think the fact that you have Warren leading the way for some of these plays as a run blocker, it's difficult to defend. And now that should open up the pass, which is good, because there's still concerns about, do you have these receivers that can really create separation and be consistent? I know Wallace and Evans are fast, but in terms of really being, I would say, consistent and dependable right now, that's sort of what I'm waiting to see that next step emerge.
Let's take a look at a couple players, individuals on defense that I thought had big games. And I think you got to point out Zane Durant made a couple big plays. And I thought Kobe King had an excellent game.
I thought King played very well. He did. And he made a lot of open field tackles, which if he doesn't make the play, you have a lot of concerns about how that's going to end up. And like, there were a couple times where Carter didn't necessarily make the play. This was something that might have been harder for you to see at the game, but they made a point of the broadcast highlighting is, you know, when Illinois was concerned with Carter double teaming, that was freeing somebody else to come up the middle and really disrupt Altmaier. So I thought that was good. I was a little surprised we didn't see Speca at linebacker. He was somebody that was sort of mentioned heading into the game. You know, I don't know what the thought process there. I know he's, from all accounts, seems to be somebody that the coaches are high on. Maybe they're sort of saving him for next year. That was something that surprised me a little. But again, overall, I thought the defense did what they wanted to do, was take away the run. And with Illinois, that's something that you need to do. The corners still, to me, are sort of, I don't say a concern, but you know, I would say at least a question mark moving forward. And again, I think we'll get those questions answered one way or another with USC in a couple weeks.
Well, they're definitely going to be tested when USC game comes about. But there's still, you know, some of the concerns I have defensively. There still feels like there's too many missed tackles. It feels that way. And I'll tell you, and I don't know, I'm still waiting for that dominant defense like what we saw last year. And I may be waiting all season for it. And I'm wondering if it's my issue that, again, looking at the numbers now, it was a pretty dominant performance in that second half. So I don't know if that's just me being prejudiced by what I thought was a poor job early by the defense.
Well, you've had a couple of slow starts from the defense, and you know, things got bad second half, but you sort of have that, I guess, first impression that's difficult to shake. I sort of share your concern about the tackling and not really finishing plays. I think that's evident. I don't really have any reason as to what's causing that. Given a lot of these players, you know, were playing last year. I think they missed Chop Robinson. I think he was a special player. And, you know, Diaz had a different style, much more of a blitzing style, attacking style. And, you know, that could create some flashier plays there for the defense. I do think the defense was special last year. So I thought there'd be a little bit of a step back here. But still, at this point, they really answered, to me, the mail just in terms of being able to take away the Illinois run game. I thought they were pretty physical up at front. That was a concern I had. And, you know, we'll find out moving forward. But I feel good about them being the more physical team when they go out to the Coliseum.
And I'll tell you what, that was something that was right from the start. Illinois could not run the ball on Penn State. And I don't think Brett Bielema came into this game thinking that would be the case, that their running game would be dominated by Penn State's defense. And it was. And I think whenever that happens, Steve, you got to give credit to the interior of the defensive line. Those defensive tackles typically don't get much credit.
You do. And then I wonder, too, I mean, the defense of those corners and some of the secondary there, I mean, maybe they're doing some run blitzes with those linebackers. That's leaving those guys isolated. And you know, that's sort of what you have to do to counter that. If those linebackers are selling out on the run, then some of those crossing patterns are a little more open. Like, you have to pick your poison there. But if you know that you can take away what the team's usual strength is in terms of running the ball and force them to pass, more often than not, that's a recipe for success. And like, at the end of the day, they gave up one touchdown. I think you can't be too upset with that.
No. And especially after a week ago, a lot of folks were on the Illinois bandwagon after they beat Nebraska at Nebraska. I think, you know, Penn State clearly the better team. UCLA, don't want to jinx them, but that should not be a competitive game next week, Steve. The next big one is in a couple weeks when they travel out to USC. Big game then. However, Steve, we are out of time. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesdays, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.